Susan Wallace is my oldest friend. I've known her since she was 6 years old, and over the years I've had to track her down because she tends not to stay in one place and she moves all over the place and all over the world. Anyway, we have found each other again, and I'm sitting in the glorious south of France, Languedoc, and I'm sitting in Louricantou, which is an absolutely wonderful establishment built by Susan and her husband Tim. These are two vacation homes plus their own home in a small town called Oupia. So, Susan, tell me how you came to be in Oupia in Languedoc.
How far can I go back? Can I go back to when I was 10 years old and dreamed of living and traveling in France and Spain in particular? And eventually it became France. But I think it really came about through cycling, because Tim and I took that up at a rather advanced age. We did a number of trips all over France, but the one that we loved the most was in 1994. We did a 3-week trip of about, I think it was about 1,500 kilometers, landing in Toulouse and following rivers and river gorges and eventually ending back up in Toulouse and flying home. But that doesn't talk about the experiences in between, the landscape, the variety, the warmth of the people, the houses, everything about it was magic. And it was a hot, hot summer. We were traveling with a friend who is a teacher, so we had no choice. And really, it's the worst time of the year to come, and yet there was still this incredible magic, and so we were drawn back to this. We kept coming to France to do our bike trips, and one day I just said to Tim, "Don't you think we could try living here?" Caught him in a weak moment, because Tim kind of likes being where he is. Wherever he is, that's where he wants to be. And he, and as I say, in a very weak moment, said, "Well, we could try." But he was locked into it from that moment. And we went home from that particular trip and made plans for a year to come back and to look for a place to buy and to live.
Okay, well, where is Tim now, other than out in the front working away? But tell, for the listeners, where exactly are we, other than the south of France? Tell our listeners, where are we exactly?
We're in a tiny village of about 250, 260 people. It's a wine-producing village. There's really nothing much else that goes on. We're surrounded by vineyards in the largest wine-producing area of all of France. It's, how will I say it? We're close to the Canal du Midi, for people who know that that's a UNESCO heritage site and also a wonderful place in its own right. We are close to mountains. The Pyrenees are about, oh, less than an hour and a half away. We have other mountains to the north that are only minutes away. The scenery changes. We can go on our bicycles because we still do. That's still our main passion, our main activity. We can go within an hour from our southern French, really Mediterranean. We're at the northern edge of the Mediterranean territory, climate, whatever you want to call it, vegetation. And within an hour, we can be riding up among chestnut trees and a totally different, completely unrecognizable landscape where they get snow in the winter. And that's within an hour cycling.
And so we are in Languedoc, and we're in a region of Languedoc called
The Minervois, right, I didn't mention. Now, Minervois refers to, well, in French it's called a terroir, and that's a very difficult idea, concept to translate into English. It covers the land, the landscape, it covers what the land produces, in particular wine. When you're talking about terroir in France, wine is probably the first thing that comes to mind, and the Minervois produces a wonderful wine. It's becoming very well known now. It's excellent wines that are becoming worldwide, known worldwide.
And Languedoc itself has an incredible history of from Greek, Roman, Saracen And a very special history, and many people may not know about it. This is the country of the Cathars, or the Cathal. Can you tell me a little bit about that history?
The Cathars developed in, about the 11th century is when they first appeared. They were, I don't know how else to compare them except to say that it was kind of a bit like the Puritan movement in England in the 1600s, when you had people who were tired of the church and the way it was doing things, the norm of the Catholic Church. They felt there was a lot of corruption and that it didn't really involve ordinary people in the way that it should. So they lived a very simple life. They followed, the tenets of the Bible more closely. But they then became a threat. The movement was so popular, they became a threat to both church and state. And so a tremendous movement. It was a crusade, the Albigensian crusade that was brought against them. And eventually, they were wiped out almost to the last person. There were pockets that remained, and they were taken care of too later on. But in the meantime, they've left a tremendous heritage of castles and legends and stories. And the troubadours really grew out of Cathar times, the poetry and the music. It was amazing times, actually.
And I should point out, the troubadours really were some of the first travel writers and the first ones who basically went from village to village telling
stories on.
Exactly. And told people what was happening out there where they couldn't go.
Right.
Can you also tell me, just describe the topography, the terrain, because this is a unique area of France. A lot of travelers do go to the south of France. They tend to go to the Côte d'Azur and Provence and places like this. This is pretty undiscovered as far as I can tell.
It's becoming more discovered, but still compared to Provence, we have far fewer people, far less traffic, quiet little roads to explore, paths, foot, bicycle, car, whatever you want to do. There are quiet ways of doing it.
Tell me about this amazing diverse topography. What else is there to do here?
Right. Well, speaking more about the topography, because I didn't, it's variety is the key word. So you have flatlands, valleys, you have mountains and hills, and a feature unique to this area, which are these very small hills, usually little rocky sort of outcroppings, covered in local plants. You'll walk over them, and you're walking over lavender, wild fennel, wild thyme, wild oregano, wild rosemary. And in the scent, especially the thyme, as you walk over low-growth thyme, the scent fills the air, and it's quite magic.
Tell me about the soup you served me for dinner last night.
That really wasn't Greek soup, though. That was made from sorrel, which grows in our garden, and it's sort of a sweet-sour taste. If you chew on a clover leaf, you'll get some idea of what sorrel tastes like. And then mixed with leeks and potatoes, it's a very French sort of recipe. But.
And of course, France, French cuisine, is part of the reason for coming here.
Yes, and not a small part either.
Right. What about opportunities for people who are not cyclists, for example? Tell me about some of the things that they can do in the area.
Well, Tim and I both enjoy doing many things, and there are opportunities for all of them here. Birding, for instance, if you like to look at birds, we have magic birds here, hoopoes that are zebra-striped with a crest and make a very strange sound, sort of a poop-poop-poop-poop. That's wonderful to hear in the spring. And bee-eaters that are paint-by-number birds. They're turquoise and yellow and chestnut and black and white and fly like little angels. And rollers, which are crow-sized, and they're turquoise and chestnut. And magpies that people in the Western Canada or Western U.S. would be more familiar with. they always, everyone wants to know, what are those big black and white birds with the long tails? And they're magpies. So birding and nightingales. We're just about now, it's the beginning of April. Very soon we should start hearing nightingales singing.
Is that hirondelle or rossignol?
Rossignol, yeah. We should start hearing them singing day and night as they establish territory and attract their mates. And that's wonderful. The sound is unbelievable. It's strident, it's varied, it's very passionate.
You know, there's one bird that you haven't mentioned. Actually, there are two that I'm going to mention, but there's one bird that I have never heard in my life. And when I arrived here a week ago, suddenly I was up on the top of the mountain and I heard it going cuckoo.
You've heard a cuckoo already?
I've heard all kinds. I heard a cuckoo outside in your garden this morning.
Really? Is that you? I wonder if that might have been the hoopoo.
No, it was cuckoo, because and it was a cuckoo. And as a matter of fact, where I was before coming to visit you here, there were all kinds of them, and the people who were hosting me there had pointed out that it was a sure sign that spring had arrived.
Well, you shame me, because you've heard one before I have.
Okay. The other bird that absolutely blew me away were the royal eagles.
Oh, yes, we do. I forget about that, because we don't have so many right over where we are, but you just go up into the Montagne Noire, you know, 15, 20 minutes away, and there are masses of eagles and other raptors, large raptors, soaring the skies. They're wonderful to watch.
What has really impressed me about this area, and I have been through the Languedoc before, you and I have discussed that, but very quickly and briefly, unfortunately, not spending the kind of quality time that one does. But what I discovered here, first of all, was, and we'll go one by one if you like, an amazing city called Montpellier. What can you tell me about Montpellier?
Oh, Montpellier is such a discovery. I think of it as a small version of Paris. It's elegant, it's gracious, and yet it's doable. You know, Paris is enormous, and you could never hope to explore the city of Paris on foot, except over years and years. Whereas Montpellier, you can wander around the old center and see everything, and yet still feel that it's a large city. It's a beautiful, and all the outdoor squares with outdoor cafes and restaurants, the life, the animation, the Place de la Comédie, which is a wonderful spot full of outdoor cafes and restaurants and full of people, and the tramway that passes through the Place de la Comédie and connects all the important places in Montpellier, and it adds to it too. You can just hop on and off.
And yesterday, you and Tim took me to a very special place called Minerve. And can you tell our listeners about Minerve and why it's so important?
Minerve now is a very small, quiet village visited mostly by tourists. There are some people that live there, but not a lot. However, it has a very important place in history. And as people may have guessed, if they've noticed, the area is called Minervois, and that comes from the town of Minerve, the village of Minerve. In Cathar history, it's important because it was a veritable stronghold. But when the Albigensian Crusade took on Minerve as a target, they managed to defeat it only by destroying access to the well. And once that the people finally capitulated, that there happened to be 180 parfaits. Now they were the highest ranking Cathars, not priests, but the equivalent of priests, the leaders. There happened to be 180 of them. I don't know why. There may have been some kind of a gathering, and they were given, when they finally capitulated, the parfaits were given the choice of converting or being burnt to death. All but one chose to be burnt to death.
So very dramatic history, very diverse history as well. Also, you're within, maybe you can give me some distances here. For example, the wonderful city of Toulouse, and how far are you from Toulouse?
I tend to talk more in the time it takes to get to places. I think I'm doing something quite local there. I've lost.
No, I think that's the best way, quite frankly, for travelers.
It takes us in our 16-year-old Peugeot 205 at least an hour and a half to get there. But we know people who claim to have got from Toulouse to here in 1 hour.
And how about distance too? And maybe you can talk to me a bit about Carcassonne.
Oh, Carcassonne. Carcassonne is the biggest, best-preserved medieval walled city in Europe. It's also a magic place. This is what Disney aspires to. The walls are still intact. There are crenellations and towers, and it's up on a high spot. When you first see it, it takes your breath away. It's also fun to explore inside because it's been very carefully protected. There is a lot of tourism there, and we occasionally have guests who are a little upset by the tourism, but as I say to them, the tourism is what keeps the place alive, what enables it to survive. And also, a friend pointed out once that really it's just the modern version of what it would have been in medieval days, you know, a medieval market with collars. So now you have tourist shops, and you have tour buses, and you have lots of people, but it's still worth seeing.
Now, I want you to tell me about Lou Récantou. What is Lou Récantou? How did you find it? What have you done with it?
Okay, well, first of all, we bought our house and the adjoining barn, and then learned that the little rundown, practically ruined stone cottage behind our place, attached to our place, but behind it, was for sale. And it was a long story, and we almost didn't get it, but we did. And we had to plan and fix it up because it hadn't been lived in for 60 years, except by rats and a few other critters, scorpions. So there was a tremendous amount of work to do that, to fix that up. Tim did most of it. I helped where I could. And we transformed it into a really lovely place to live. And I can say that quite safely because all of our guests tell us that. The name itself, Lou Récantou, means the little place around the corner. And it's in Occitan. And Occitan is the old language of the south of France, with variations as you go across France. But it's still spoken by people here over the age of 70. It's not a current language. There are some young people who will understand it because their grandparents speak it to them. And it's taught a bit in the schools, and you can get books and articles in Occitan.
And you actually have created here, and there will be pictures on the website, and people listening to our chat here can actually sit and look at these pictures of this amazingly. It's a chef d'oeuvre that you've created. But you've actually got two self-catering vacation properties here. One actually called Lou Récantou, and the other L'Ancien Pressoir. Am I correct?
That's the upper floor of the barn that was attached to our house that we bought. And it used to be, before there were co-ops, you know, wine co-ops all over the area, every individual household would press its own wine, or their own grapes, rather, and produce their own wine. Pretty bad stuff it was, too. Mm-hmm. However, our barn, as many of the ones, local ones were, was used as a press. And so that's why it's called L'Ancien Pressoir, which means the former or the old wine press.
And so in terms of the actual accommodation here, of these two self-catering apartments, really, tell me what clients who come from wherever, what do they get when they come here in terms of facilities, amenities? Just tell me about what are they going to find when they come and stay with you?
Everything's included. They don't have to pay anything for utilities. There's the use of telephone in both of the accommodations. People will have to pay for their own usage of the telephone, of course. there's a computer in Luraycon 2 with high-speed internet access. If you have a laptop with wireless access, you can use it in the apartment as well. All linens, you know, all bedding, all towels, everything you could possibly need, even napkins and tablecloths are provided. No extra charge, as I say, for heating or for electricity. That's all included in the price. And for Luraycon 2, there's a pool. It's a small pool for, you know, swimming. And it's now solar heated, so it should be easily usable from the beginning of April till the end of October. And a stone terrace with a great view. If you stand on the terrace, you're looking over to the Chateau de Beaufort. It's 12th century with the Montagne Noire, the Black Mountains, in behind. And that's the view from the terrace and from my kitchen window, I might add.
I've seen it from, I've taken a picture through your kitchen window as well. So, Susan, where are you going next?
Nowhere. I think, Bob is looking at me skeptically, but I think I've found the place where I want to stay the rest of my life. I'm no longer at the point where I'm dreaming of living anywhere else, which is what I did my entire life. I was always dreaming of living here or living there or going here or going there. Airplanes would fly overhead, and I'd want to be on them. Didn't matter where they were going, I wanted to be on one. And now I'm happy being here.
So the Royal Eagle has landed.
Oh! What can I say to that? No, this is a place to be content, and we love our neighbors, and they've been very good to us. We love everything here. I can't make a single complaint about our life and the people.
Are you going to invite me back?
You better come back. It took 20 years for us to find each other again. And I don't know whether you'll want to include this or not, but I found Bob by doing a Google image search. Anyway, it's too long a story.
So after a little emotional break there, I'm going to say au revoir, not adieu.
And we'll look forward to having you back.